feeling my way through the darkness, guided by a beating heart.
Welcome back here to 560 WQAM and welcome to the 4 o'clock hour. Greg Likens alongside Brian Monroe in for Hocken Crowder on this Thursday. Danny GQ with us as well. Hope everybody is doing well out there as we continue on. Of course, we've been talking a lot about Russell Westbrook and the Heat. Talked a little about the ESPYs last night and kind of went all over the place from there. But, Brian, you do a great job talking about the Hurricanes. You're a former Hurricanes player. Always a Hurricane at heart, right?
Yeah, always.
We established that yesterday. And, of course, it's interesting for both of our football teams here in South Florida. The quarterback competition is a major talking point, whether it be with the Dolphins and Josh Rosen and Ryan Fitzpatrick, or, of course, with the Miami Hurricanes. They've got a trio of players that are in the mix. And so I know that we aren't going to get a lot of new information until practices begin for both of these teams, but you're very close to the program. You serve as the post-game analyst here on QAM for the Miami Hurricanes radio network. And I saw Barry Jackson from the Miami Herald wrote about the quarterbacks yesterday for the Herald and for Herald Doc, the Miami Herald's website. And so I wanted to read a little bit of what he had to say here and then get your reaction to it. So as he writes that UM offensive coordinator Dan Enos discussed what he wants in a starting quarterback during the offseason, he says, I found this line interesting. Quote, you've got to have the mind of a coach and the game of a player, end quote. And so Barry goes on to write that one of the many benefits of Tate Martell coming to UM is that his mere presence has reminded Nikosi Perry and Jaren Williams that they need to know this offense backward and forward and not rely on teammates or coaches to bail them out. And so he goes on to describe that Martell has a reputation for being a stickler for details and having a strong knowledge of whatever offense that he's running. And that, you know, he goes on to hearken back to last year where both Nikosi Perry and Jaren Williams, you could question their work ethic. And, I mean, you and I talked about it at the time when Nikosi Perry came out and said, oh, no, I'm studying harder now and all this other stuff. And it's like, well, what happened? Like, why did the light go on now?
What you've been doing for the past year.
Yeah, so that's been an issue. But as Barry writes, here's the good news. With regard to Perry and Williams, they have appeared to get the message. Their work habits have improved this offseason, and they're taking this more seriously, UM people say. Though Perry won the spring MVP quarterback award and might be a slight favorite for the starting job, two UM football officials insist the job is wide open, and all three have a legitimate chance to win it. Coach Manny Diaz said all three will enter the practices July 25th and 26th. With the ability to start, and they're going to be rotating players. So this all courtesy of Barry. He goes on, I can read some more of that, but what's your initial instinct when it comes to this? And you hear this, because again, a lot of people are feeling good about Nikosi Perry, but as this indicates, according to a couple of UM officials, they're looking at this, all these guys have a blank slate starting at the end of this month.
As they should say to the media and the public, right, that everybody's a blank, you know, sheet, and you don't want to give your opponents an upper hand to say we know who we're going to play. You know, there's a lot to this as far as the quarterback position. I don't know if a lot of you guys out there know Coach Enos or have seen him in practice. He doesn't speak very softly. He yells the whole time. Mm-hmm. He's very demanding of not only his players but his coaches. I mean, I was at a practice where he was ripping a coach. I was like, oh shoot!
One of the coaches that works under him.
Yeah, a position coach, because his guys weren't doing it the right way that he wanted. And, you know, your job as the position coach is to take what Coach Enos and be able to present it so your guys can take it in, understand it, and put it back on the field. So I saw that from Coach Enos, and I said, well, this offense is going to take the next step for sure, because he's such a stickler on being in the right spot at the right time. And he's got a lot of moving parts to his offense, a lot of motions, a lot of shifts. He also will do spread. He'll do pro style. He'll do a fullback. He'll do a single back. Like, he does a lot, which is great. When it comes to the quarterback position, I think every single one of these guys is just a little bit different, right? Last year, we talked about it on air many a times about how these dudes aren't doing the right stuff off the field, because the only one that wasn't suspended or got in trouble was Malik Rozier. And that's the reason why he pretty much started the whole time, because he actually was holding himself as a quarterback should at the University of Miami. Mm-hmm. It truly pissed me off when Nikosi Perry came out last year, I believe it was a Georgia Tech game, where he said, oh yeah, you know what's different is that I'm studying a lot more and I'm actually, you know, doing what I should. What? What? What do you mean you're studying a lot more? You ain't got nothing else to do. You study for school, you study for football. You should know the playbook like the back of your hand. So I knew with Coach Enos, he was going to be on that. Mm-hmm. And it's the same with Manny Diaz. Coach Diaz does not play when it comes to the playbook, being in the right position. So once those hires were there, I knew that these guys would take the next step as far as becoming a mature quarterback. Because it's an open competition. When you bring in a new coaching staff, I really don't care who you are. The best guy is going to play, and the best guy that knows my playbook, who I can trust, who's not going to get me fired or my family not to be able to be fed, I'm going to go with them. So I remember watching all the practices. I went to about 3 or 4, you know, different things. And I'll say this. For me, Nikosi looked the most comfortable. He looked the best of all the spring practices and the scrimmage that I saw. Jaren Williams took the next step. Live arm. I've always loved his arm. Love the way he gets through his progressions. I don't think he's there just quite yet. And to me, Tate came in with all this hype, right? Everyone knows Tate Martell, 4-star, 5-star quarterback out of Vegas, was on the show QB1 for Netflix, went to Ohio State, the whole 9 yards.
Well, and part of a big part of this offseason conversation was around surrounding whether he would be eligible right away.
Exactly.
Right? And everybody was so elated when he was, and the NCAA granted his transfer immediately.
And then you saw him on the field, and I was like, all right, is he nervous? Like, he just doesn't look right. Like, you know, I promise you, when I went to the second practice, they didn't throw one spiral, not one. They were all, like, wobbling. Mm. And I was like, he's got to be nervous. Like, there's got to be so much pressure on him with all the outside noise. And friends talked to him, former players, and he finally loosened up. And we saw in the last scrimmage, he became who we thought he was. Be yourself. Have fun. Let it rip. If you ask me right now who's the leader from everything I saw, I would go in Nikosi. I think Nikosi's actually taken a huge step from what he did before. And the throws that he made when I was there were pretty nice and unbelievable. Tate would be in second for me, but I also think you'd have to run a completely different offense than you do for a Jaren Williams and a Nikosi Perry because he's a little bit shorter. He uses his feet a lot more. So you would bring in the more of the spread, zone read type offense to get him going. I'm excited to see when camp opens up how each guy handles the pressure or not winning the job. I believe... I'm not going to say his name, but I believe one of the guys, if he doesn't win the job, will transfer out of University of Miami. And the biggest thing is summertime for them, right? So Coach Diaz said that a lot of these guys are going to make and break who the starters are on how they handle themselves in this offseason, right? Because I don't know, we did some shows after the spring ball, like, you're going to get very vanilla. We're going to just go through to see who can digest this playbook and take everything in. In summertime, it's going to be on you. You're going to be, there's no classes except maybe if you have to take a summer class. Session A or Session B, everything's going to be the playbook. 7-on-7, who's calling the guys to go throw balls? Because we can't, because NCAA violations, you can't do it as a coach.
Yeah,
you have to do it yourself. Who is going to be the player on the field and the coach off the field? That, to me, is what's going to separate these guys as soon as they get to camp, because we're going to know in the first week who did the extras. And everything that I'm hearing from the guys, there are multiple people are doing it. It's just not Tate calling up guys to throw. It's just not Nikosi. Like, they're all doing it, which is great because I don't think UM fans have had this excitement for a quarterback competition down here in years to say that we truly have a potential offensive coordinator that can take our offense from being in the 80s and 90s to potentially in the – I'm not even asking for the guy to do miracles the first year. You put me in the 40s, we gonna win every game. We really would. If you put this team offense in the 40s last year,
right,
we lose what? 1-2 games? You know, we probably lose the LSU game, maybe. Or if we had better punter too, but maybe the LSU and then maybe one at the end. But other than that, we would have won them all. So if he could just take this team into the 40s or 50s on offense, and our defense is what Manny's been doing all these years, it's going to be scary next year. So I'm looking forward to camp. I can't wait for it to start. I'm getting goosebumps right now just thinking about the first game. It's going to be a tough game. Nobody wouldn't want any other way than to open up with the Florida Gators, who we haven't played in years. You got a lot of Florida kids. They got a lot of South Florida kids. these guys know each other, and it's going to be that rivalry that we truly expect and love. They got a great offensive coordinator and a great offensive mind in their head coach. They lost a lot on their offensive line, so I think our front seven really have to take advantage of their offensive line and let our athletes go, because they got athletes, we got athletes. Put your big boy pads on. It's going to be fun.
Well, and this is going to, you know, I feel like there's going to be a massive jump to conclusions, overreaction. I think you and I have talked about this before already this offseason, but, you know, Manny Diaz, we haven't seen him coach a game.
Nope.
As a head coach before.
Nope.
So that's a major question mark. There are so many great things that he's already done up to this point in terms of infusing the energy with the program with new energy and really getting people to rally around the cause and the new Miami and the way he's using social media to attract attention while also really doing what is great for the young people, right? Like they are attracted to that, right? They want to see.
That's all they love nowadays.
All that stuff on social media. He's really done a great job of that and keeping all of us, you know, interested and intrigued to see what's next. Like who's the next transfer and who's the next recruit they're going to announce and what else is he going to do? Is he going to pull up in a yacht to a charity event? Like he's keeping things interesting and bringing this energy that you just didn't have with Mark Richt. So with that being said, we still don't know how he is as a head coach. And depending on how things go against Florida, like either he's going to be the greatest coach in the world or we're going to be like, oh, I don't know if he's going to be any good after just one game.
Yeah, well, that's our fan base.
But that's the way things go.
We expect that, right? But, you know, you come to Miami, you expect greatness, right? So we expect him to go out there, compete with Florida. We're, you know, a touchdown underdog, but we expect to go in there and beat them. Now, you could say, oh, yeah, you guys are this and you lose that and whatever, but I think Manny Diaz did an amazing job of getting the transfer portal. So, yes, we didn't have the best of recruiting class, but we went and got older, mature guys with a lot of college football under their belt that are going to step in right away and contribute. I think one of the best transfers he's got that showed his maturity on the field and off the field as a leader is KJ Osborne, the receiver from Buffalo. He was a kid that when I saw him on his official visit, the first thing he said was, I just can't wait to work. I was like, say one more time for me real quick, one more time, because that is, you don't hear that from kids nowadays. He goes, yeah, I really just want to get down here and get in the weight room and start to work. I'm like, God, thank you, Jesus, because we needed that in that receivers room, because you see the guys that you lost from the previous year. You lose the Braxton Berrios, you lost an older guy, Lawrence Cager, the whole nine yards, and you had Amon Richards, and now you're like, okay, so our best dude is Jeff Thomas, who's potentially transferring, and then we also have Brian Hautauer and Mark Pope, who hasn't lived up to the five-star billing yet. We need that veteran guy to say, this is how you become a college football player.
Yeah.
And the first thing he did for those young dudes is showed them that. Every single practice in spring, he stayed for at least 30 minutes on the jugs. 30 minutes. I haven't seen that since I was in school, to someone that does that at the receivers. So I think he's going to have a huge impact on offense. And then I think on defense, the guy that I love, that I'm so glad we got, is Trayvon Hill, defensive end from VTech, because I remember watching that Florida State game where he was just killing their left tackle, interceptions, the whole nine yards. And again, you know, we lose a lot on our front four, so we needed to have some impact guys. We got the kid out of UCLA as well, mm-hmm. who's going to be able to plug in and do some things. But you get a Jonathan Garvin on one side and you get a Trayvon Hill on the other side. That's pretty scary for ACC quarterbacks.
Yeah, and to think they were able to do that so quickly because of the transfer portal, it just provides an all new dynamic to college football. And you know, we could have a much different conversation about whether that's going to stay that way and if it's good for the game, all of this stuff.
Yeah, you know that's going to change.
Yeah, but the bottom line is that Manny Diaz is doing a great job considering the circumstances, taking advantage of that and making up for the lost ground that really not his responsibility, but when you get hired that late in the process and then have to try to get together a recruiting class and make sure that you don't lose a bunch of guys. And so,
which we did.
Yeah.
We lost a ton of dudes in recruiting class, but you got to expect it. Coaching changes.
That's what happens.
You don't know who's going to be the coach, you know, and you get the negative recruiting on your team. Mm-hmm. So I think Manny did an amazing job taking advantage of that transfer portal, bringing in the veteran guys, and then salvaging that class, because right now he's had more of a full season coming under his belt with his recruiting class, and they're sitting top 10 and all the stuff. So in the right direction. And, you know, he's looking at it differently. He's like, I don't care about stars. I don't care what you're ranked. I care about how do you fit on my team? Do you embody what it means to Miami Hurricane? Are you tough? Are you going to fight? You're going to claw your way to the top. Those are the guys he's going after. So very, very eager and anxious to see how he puts these next coming recruiting classes together. And we'll see how the season goes.
We will. We're getting a bunch of texts on this, as you can imagine. Canes fans fired up. Kendall Toyota, West Kendall Toyota text line is open. 560-22, 560-22. Want to come back and read some of those. Plus, I just read a brief part of Barry Jackson's article. He goes on to also write about a real authority on high school football recruiting and some high praise from this authority for Tate Martell. And I don't know what this is going to mean in terms of the quarterback competition, but we're going to share it with you next. We'll get Brian's reaction, plus we'll read some of your text. Stay tuned here on 560 WQAM. Radio.com. Radio.com. We're back here on 560 WQAM. Greg Likens alongside Brian Monroe filling in for Hawk and Crowder. We'll be with you again tomorrow as well from 2 to 6. Danny GQ on the other side of the glass as we continue on here. We've got a bunch of people who are texting in. If you want to join us, 560-22 on the Kendall Toyota, West Kendall Toyota text line, 560-22. One of our texters here says, Nicosi has the most experience, because we've been talking about the Canes quarterback situation. Says, in the real world, experience counts in the long run. If he's gotten the knucklehead out of him, he will be fine. If not, he'll be gone. Yeah, I mean, listen, that's part of this, Brian, is that when we're talking about college age kids, and listen, you being a member of the football team, I'm sure you saw, you know, a variety of different maturity levels in that locker room, right, when you were down there playing in Coral Gables. So part of this to me is, whether it's Nicosi Perry or anybody on the team, or Jaron Williams, we talked about both of them kind of getting into trouble a little bit last year, is it a matter of that's the way they're always going to be, but they just happen to be talented athletes, so they're getting a chance? Or is this one of those things where it's just a learning situation? Everybody makes certain levels of mistakes when they're that age. And, you know, once they figure out, hey, don't want to do that again, get on the right path, then you'll never worry about it again, right? It's hard to tell, because I think it doesn't matter if you're talking about athletes, you're talking about just everyday people who have an opportunity to go to college and get an education, but maybe they don't take advantage of it. Like, that can go for anybody who's 18 to 22 years old.
I think the knucklehead stuff all depends on how the coach school handles everything, right? I think that molds young men to be either more mature and handle themselves differently when it comes to the future, or if they get away with it, then they're like, oh, yeah, now I know I can get away with it again because I'm the man. I'm above the law. And that's happened in many of colleges around the country for years.
Right.
I think the great thing about Manny is that he's a no-nonsense type of guy. And so was Coach Richt. I'll give that. Coach Richt was a very disciplinary guy, strict, kick you off the team if you do this, but he's going to get all the facts, the whole nine yards. I don't know those guys personally to say how they're going to handle themselves moving forward, as far as like, okay, they got in trouble, now they're mature and they're the man. I can't say that because I don't know them like that. You would hope, now that you say, I'm a talented kid, it's an open competition, it's a new playbook, they're learning just like I'm learning, I could take the reins and be the guy. You hope they say that, right? But everybody's different. Especially kids nowadays, because their mindsets are way different now with social media and stuff like that. It's like, oh, I lost a job, I'm transferring. You ever heard of fighting it out?
Like, you see that all the time. Yeah.
Do you think the green is always grass greener on the other side? Like, come on, like, fight. Get your position. And it sucks. It's tough, because I feel like a lot of people just, it's not my team. I'm gone. I'm going to leave. I feel like one of those guys is like that. I feel like one of those dudes hasn't grown up and will be like that. But we'll see. I was happy to see them stick it out, because there was rumors last year when the change and everything, that he was thinking about transferring depending on who they brought in.
Yeah.
He stayed. He fought it out. Let's go. As far as, will these guys change from their knucklehead ways? I would say yes, because of who they have as their coaches right now. Coach Diaz doesn't play. And from what I've seen from Coach Enos, man, he don't play either.
I mean, your description of him letting one of the assistant coaches have it.
He was giving him the business. And I was like, damn, who's he cussing out? I'm like, oh, shoot, he's cussing out the coach. Like, wow. So I think that's going to help these young men mature more and take that next step in becoming mature. But listen, we all go into college thinking we know it all and, you know, whatever. But when you look back at it, you're like, yeah, I was a little immature, snot-nosed brat, right? And, you know, I remember when I grew up, it was more like my sophomore year going into my junior year is when I took the step of being more mature. And even my academic advisors will say, they'll be like, oh my God, you were a terror your freshman year. I hated you. I was like, say what? They're like, yeah, you were the worst. I'm like, okay, well, good to know.
You're glad they're not sugarcoating you.
Yeah. But I could see them taking the next step because who they're surrounded by and how you, you know, discipline the guys off the field. You know, I always look back at, I'm not just trying this school because I don't like them, but I always look at the Jameis Winston situation, right? Jameis Winston got into trouble many a times and encounters that you really don't want from young men that's been in certain situations. But the way that they disciplined him and handled it, it made it look seem like he could think in his own mind, I'm above the law.
Yeah, there's a sense of entitlement that's created there. Yeah.
And then what happens when he goes to the league? He now gets in trouble for something very similar because you didn't nip it in the butt when he was a kid and say, hey, by the way, you're suspended for the year because you can't do this. Because if you go to the league and you do the same exact thing, you're not going to have a job and you're going to go to jail. But instead, you get suspended for nothing.
Yeah, basically a slap on the wrist.
And then all of a sudden you steal something and you still don't get suspended. But then you get suspended for standing up on the desk at a student hall or whatever you want to call it and yelled at an obscene jester. Hey, by the way, you know you were just in trouble for something to do with a young lady. You probably shouldn't do that. And then they finally suspended him. But it took you three situations to suspend the kid. And then when it happens, I'm like, why is anybody shocked? You didn't do anything when he was showing all the signs. Now you give him millions of dollars and he's the starting quarterback of the NFL. You don't think he's a little entitled right now?
Yeah.
So for all the coaches out there, right, it's everything. You know, you have to show these young men how to become real men, how to mature. And lucky for me, I had certain coaches that did that. Coach Hollinger was, he'd make you feel like you're 3 feet tall. He would, you know, give you the business and he'd give you a straight shooter. But you realize why he was doing it because he cared for you and he wanted you to take that next step and be in that growth. And he always said, be happy that I'm yelling at you. Because when I stop yelling, that's when I don't care. And that's when you know you ain't got a spot no more on his team. You ain't going to be in the rotation no more. So...
yeah, you don't want to be apathetic, right?
No.
That's the worst thing.
Yeah, no. Mm-mm. But, I mean, listen, these guys all have, you know, something for what I think going against them all, right? So you got the two guys in Jaren and Nikosi that already had their off-the-field issue. Can they mature? Can they take the next step from that? Then you got Tate who comes in as the flashy kid on Netflix, 5-star recruit, Gatorade player. Everybody knows he comes from an affluent family. Now he's on social media. He's got the good-looking girlfriend that everybody knows from wearing nothing on Instagram. Can he handle that? Can he study? Like, are these guys going to be able to take that next step and all that? Because those are all things that we don't need those distractions. If you really want to be the man and be the quarterback at a big-time university, it's going to be boring. It's just going to be boring most of the time because you need to be in the playbook. You need to be the guy getting on people's cases. Yes, you can have fun after the game and everything like that, but the rest of the time, you got to be bored. Like, I did a show with Romberg on 4th of July.
Right.
And we brought it up with Tate Martell and the girlfriend and everything because he goes back and forth with people in the comment section about the girlfriend. I'm like, oh, my God. And Romberg looks at me and goes, this ain't going to be good. This is not going to be good.
Yeah, you cannot be utilizing your energies away from the field
to
be worried about all that stuff.
No. So I just hope when it gets down to camp time, all three of them can put the past distractions behind them and become the man. Because if none of them can do that, buckle up, Canes fans. It's going to be a long season.
I want to read a little bit of this from what Barry wrote about in the Miami Herald. So I already told you the first part of it. The second part of it, he talked to Tom Lemming, who, you know, is a huge name when it comes to high school recruiting.
The recruiting guy, yeah.
Yeah, and so Tom Lemming apparently, you know, when Tate Martell was in high school, he went out to Vegas and met with him and his family and watched film with him and all this other stuff. And so he said, among other things, he said, quote, He's got instincts, has terrific skills as a runner, and can thread the needle in tight passing windows. He's a big-time quarterback. He can pick things apart, but can tuck and run for yards. He's a defensive nightmare because you don't know if he will throw or run with it. He can do both exceptionally well. He went on to say this, without a doubt, he should be as good as Ken Dorsey or at least Kyle Wright. He says, and I saw all three. He's a game-breaking type quarterback, end quote. So
did he just say Ken Dorsey?
He just said Ken Dorsey. So, again, I know what you described based on what you saw, and I'm not doubting anything you said because you were there for the practices during this offseason, during the spring practices. And Tom Lemming's coming at this, I think, from the perspective of, hey, when he was recruited out of high school, so a couple of years have gone by now since then. But I thought that was really interesting that Lemming is now harkening back to, you know, Kyle Wright was a highly touted guy. We all know that. And had a decent career. I mean, didn't, I don't think fairly we can say that he didn't live up to the hype of, you know, with a five-star quarterback and all that stuff. But he brings up Ken Dorsey's name. And so, yeah, I mean, that's where you're talking about some rarefied air when it comes to what Kane's quarterbacks have accomplished. And really the most recent, right, the most recent national champion. So, yeah. You know, I don't know if we can buy into this or not, or if this is putting undue pressure on Tate Martell, but when people read something like this, you know, it's like, oh, this adds to the hype train that Tate Martell already had. And if he doesn't win the job, then it's like, hey, what's going on? So I don't know. I found that really interesting that he brought up, especially Ken Dorsey's name, when talking about the upside of Tate Martell.
I'll say this, watching the kid's film and seeing what he did at Bishop Gorman and the whole nine yards is that, you can, the one thing I loved when he transferred here is he's got that it factor.
Mm-hmm.
He's got that swag and that a-hole attitude that you want from your quarterback. All he wants to do is win. He just wants to win and rub it in your face.
Right.
I want that from my quarterback. But you have to design the offense for him. He's a little bit shorter than a quarterback. You're going to have to run more spread because, like Lemon said, is that he could tuck it and run it whenever you want. But you have to design it around him. Can he have that ability to take this team to a national championship? He has some traits, but there are things that this team will have to change specifically up front to get this roster to a championship roster.
Well, so to add to that, like, is Dan Enos, does he have a couple of different plans in place? Like,
yes.
He does. So
yes. The offense will look different for every single guy.
So he'll format the offense accordingly. I'd love to hear that.
He already said that.
Because we've seen this in the past, at not just at the University of Miami, but all over football, where you've got these coaches who are so hell-bent on doing things their way. And yes, they've had success before, but they don't have enough knowledge or common sense, or maybe their ego gets in the way, where instead of taking the talent they have there and tailoring whatever they're going to do to fit the talent to maximize their possibilities, they just say, hey, this is the system, this is how you run it, I don't care who it is, year to year everybody runs the same system the same way. And it's like, dude, what the heck are we doing? Like, in a way, like, that's kind of what you're coming out of with Mark Richt, where he says, yeah, we've been running the same plays for 20-25 years.
Oh, great.
It's like, well, dude, have you ever heard of evolving with the times? Have you ever heard of making sure you personalize it to whoever's running the offense?
Listen, we all know it's bad when the whole stadium knows your cadence on offense and they're clapping when the coach is during the whole game. You know something's wrong. And it was music to my ears when I heard him say, well, all three guys are a little bit different, so our offense will look a little bit different and run a little bit different when each one is in there. I was like,
wow.
Who's this?
Praise
Hallelujah.
The Lord.
My man. And then I almost fainted the first practice I went to. The very first play they ran, it was a shift and motion from the tight end. I thought, like, oh my God. Oh my God. Am I at Twilight Zone? I've never seen that, but I haven't seen this in 4 years. When did we ever motion a tight end? So he is doing things that you want to see from your offensive coordinator. Obviously, you want to adapt to the game, and then you want to make the defense on stand on their toes and worry about everything, confuse them. And, you know, we just haven't done that the last 4 years. I feel like we're very, you know, straightforward vanilla offense the last 4 years. And we could say it's because Coach Richt was in the last 20 years plays, or we can say that the kids didn't execute the plays the right way.
Mm-hmm.
For me, from what, you know, Lemon said, is that for this to be a championship team, it starts up front. You could say you could have the most talented quarterback in the world. That boy's going to be running for his life if you ain't got no offensive lineman to protect him. Because you know what Dorsey had? He had a wall of China up there. He ain't getting touched. You see a Bryant McKinney on this team?
No, I do not.
Okay. Yeah. See a Brett Romberg on this team?
Not yet.
Okay, so when we get that fixed, then we can talk about championship caliber teams. Right now, we got lots of good players, some elite in different positions, but as a whole, in depth, we ain't there yet, personally. We just ain't there yet.
That's fair. And, you know, I know you, as much as anyone else, wants to see them return
to that
point. Oh,
God, please, man, you have no idea. I don't want to hear it from my friends.
But you call it like it is, and so I appreciate that about you, Brian. And we got a bunch of people texting in. They got some UM questions, so we'll get to that when we come back. Kendall Toyota, West Kendall Toyota text line, 560-22, 560-22. Do want to let you know, coming up at 5 o'clock, if you haven't heard the latest on the negotiations for Russell Westbrook, we will reset that for you. But a little more Canes talk when we return here on QAM.
Radio.com. Radio.com.
Getting close to the 5 o'clock hour here on QAM. Greg Likens alongside Brian Monroe. In that hour, we will reset the latest on the Russell Westbrook watch and what's going on behind the scenes between the Heat and the Thunder. We've got some insight into the negotiations, so we'll tell you all about that coming up at the top of the hour. But as we continue on here in the 4 o'clock hour, we will read some of your text messages. Kendall Toyota, West Kendall Toyota text line, 560-22. 560-22 is how you reach us. Somebody here says, great show, guys. Great variety of sports talk and love the Canes stuff as well. Well, thank you. We appreciate you listening. I believe there is a ton of sarcasm with this next text. Says Wagner might be a tough game.
That's not next year, though.
It's
That's the year after.
But even with that being said, Wagner may be a tough game.
Hey, man, never know. Never know who they're going to recruit until then.
Have you seen Wagner in the transfer portal? My goodness,
I didn't even know Wagner had a football team.
I didn't either. We saw that, what, was it yesterday or the day before?
Yeah, they released the schedule.
They finalized that, and I was like, Wagner? What?
I was like, Wagner, is it the basketball schedule?
Right. Like, so, okay.
Well, I mean, listen, one thing I love that our team does is that we don't mind playing anybody. Right, so last year we opened up with LSU. This year we got Florida. Next year we go to Michigan State. The year after that we go Alabama.
Right.
Like, we don't care. You're going to put in a couple teams where you're like, all right, this is a tune-up game. But we always put at least one big, big game.
I'm glad you went down that direction, because for a second there I thought you were going to say, we play anybody. And Wagner, dude, nobody's scheduling them, but we – but I'm glad you refrained from doing that.
No. You got to, you know – you got to have at least two tune-up games on your schedule.
Yes.
You got to have two.
Everybody does.
Yeah, then you hope the next two you at least schedule one big-time opponent from another conference and then one game that's tricky, right? Because UAB is not, like, shabby. They'd be tricky. Mm-hmm. Appalachian State in the years before, they're a tricky team. So I like to see when we do that type of thing. Well, I mean, listen.
That's like what Arkansas State was, too. Right?
It's a tricky game. Sometimes they give people a fit.
Right.
You know, and people are like, oh, this is scheduled. I'm like, I mean, we got four SEC schools out of the next 5 years, so I guess it isn't too bad that we're doing, right?
Yeah.
Shoot. LSU, Florida, Bama. That's not too bad.
No, not at all. We got a text. This is from Frank, who's texting. He says, because Jaren Williams redshirted and only played one series all season, if he doesn't get picked as a first or second string quarterback, he can transfer immediately and start immediately somewhere. Is that right? I don't know if that's true or not.
He can't start immediately because I do believe they tweaked the transfer portal rules recently, and he would need to have why he transferred for whatever reason. Like, I'll give you an example. They said, I'm moving closer to home because I have a medical for family.
There's got to be a valid excuse.
You now have to have in writing to say from the AD previously and the AD now that you're okay with it, and what are you going to be doing to help with that medical? So if he just leaves because he loses the job, I do believe his waiver would get denied. Now, if you go to D1, if he goes to a lower tier, he can start right away.
Yeah, I mean, he can still transfer. He's got to sit out a year.
Yes.
Yeah, so to answer the question, though, that's good insight. Somebody says, I have more questions about the Canes coaches than I have with the players. Enos has never called a game. Manny has never managed a game. Can they make game time adjustments, handle timeouts, manage the clock, etc.? Those things are just as important. Do you have any?
Well, wasn't Coach Enos the head coach of Western Michigan and the offensive coordinator at Arkansas, where he did do the play calling? I know he didn't do it at Bama, but I thought he did it at Arkansas.
I was under the impression that he has called plays previously.
Yeah. I mean, Texter, if you know some information, please let us know. But I'm under the impression that he did call plays at Arkansas and he was a head coach at Western Michigan.
The other part of that, though, I mean, I do think that's going to be a work in progress in terms of all of us,
of course,
evaluating Coach Diaz and his staff. And it's not just Coach. It'll ultimately come back on Coach Diaz. He's the head coach. But how he delegates the responsibility of game management, right? Like who he has on his staff that is letting him know about, you know, when there should be a timeout and, you know, what they want to do in this situation when it comes to, you know, a fourth and short and where they are on the field and situational football.
Yeah.
Those are things oftentimes you talk to coaches that they devise that plan in the offseason, right? This downtime, they come up with all of that. And so it'll be interesting to see how that all comes into play while they enter their first season together.
With those two dudes, fourth and short, we're going for it this year, baby. We're
for it. I prefer that. That's for sure. Okay, we got another texter that says, Manny has 3 years of film on Dan Mullen's offense. There shouldn't be too many surprises, so there shouldn't be any excuses. Why can't they beat the Gators?
Well, there is no excuse why you can't beat the Gators, and they also have been on the same staff, I do believe, previously. So he knows their offense very well. And also you have Dan Enos, who's played against him with Alabama and then him at Florida or Mississippi State. So they will be very familiar with their offense. We can beat them, but if you're looking at the overall coaches, players, we should be the underdog. The season that we had last year, going through a coaching change, new coaches, we should be the underdog. But we love that. We love that.
Yeah, and I'm looking here. We got a wide variety of reactions to some of this stuff, the Jameis Winston stuff. And somebody says, I'm so tired of UMBS, one garbage incident after another, whether in school or years later. Remember, once a Cane, always a Cane. Every coach up to this most recent clown is the one, the savior, ugh, enough. Sounds like a Gators or Seminoles fan.
I hope it's more of a Florida State fan, because if you're a Florida fan talking about your players and getting in trouble, please don't talk. Because if we want to go back to Urban Meyer, you guys had 36 arrests. And if you want to go back to the next guy, you had 24. So, yeah, if you want to add those up, you let me know there, buddy.
We have some other people saying Enos, longtime play caller, definitely called plays at Arkansas and at Central Michigan, I think, says one of our other texters. So, yeah, I mean, I didn't have a concern about Enos and his play calling.
No.
I do think that it was interesting that he was essentially the offensive coordinator at Alabama but didn't call the plays. But,
yes.
But that's not unique. I mean, we saw that. Heck, I'm just thinking about South Florida ties. Like, Joe Philbin was the offensive coordinator in Green Bay but didn't call the plays when he was working with Aaron Rodgers because Mike McCarthy was calling the plays. So that's not all that odd. But it's not like Enos had that position, and that's the only time he's had that position. He has experience. To me, the experience question is more about Manny Diaz.
Yes, and how he's going to handle, like you said, in-game situation, adversity, those type of things. And I actually like the fact that even though he didn't play call at Alabama, he was around a staff like that, Coach Saban, how he prepared for games, practices, the whole nine yards, which it only makes you a better coach when you're around one of the greatest to ever do it.
One of our other texters says, why do you think Brad Kaya left early in 2016? Was it because of Rick's offense, which was very different under Golden? Kaya played one season under Rick, maybe didn't like it. And then in 2015, every analyst kept saying he's a first-round draft pick. Then after 2016, didn't happen. So,
well, you just said it right there. After 2015, everybody came into the year saying, oh, this guy's going to be a first-round pick. I have a buddy of mine that literally watched one game. He goes, I would take him off my board. I was like, what?
Completely?
Completely. And it was the second game of the year. I said, really? He goes, I would take him off my board. He's like, that's not going to transition into the NFL. He's not that guy. Mm. Sure enough, we got to the draft. I was like, yeah, I guess you were right.
We've had a few instances like that with Canes players in the draft where we all thought one thing and then something else happened.
With the most recent Gerald being Jarrell Willis, I think it was a more shock than Kaya, because Willis was, you know, havoc through the whole year. He was probably one of the best interior linemen in college football, stats-wise, and disruption. But I talked to one of the NFL scouts, and I said, come on, give me, you know, straight. What was it? He goes, he's like, in all honesty, there was, you know, there were some off-the-field issues that were brought up, and then there was also, like, an injury. Was it a real injury? Was it not injury? It held him out of certain games, so that scared people. He goes, that's kind of what scared us. Hmm. I was like, okay, well, you gave it to me straight, and now I understand, because I'm looking at him like, yeah, he's going to be latest third-round pick.
Yeah, and, you know, now it's up to him. So
that's it.
He can make the most of it, and if it pans out and he proves everybody wrong, then he'll get that second contract and
put the chip on your shoulder. And I told people, I said, listen, you don't want him to get picked in the sixth or seventh round. You want him to be a free agent, because now he gets to look at the roster and pick the ideal situation for him.
Yes.
So be happy he didn't get stuck in a situation in the seventh round behind five D tackles. Like, now he gets to pick the Baltimore Ravens. They lost a guy or two on their line. He can go in there and compete right away.
Brian, we have a lot to get into. For those who are just tuning in here, the tail end of this 4 o'clock hour, we're going to kick off the 5 o'clock hour by updating everybody on what's going on with Russell Westbrook, because that's been the hot topic all week. No trade has been made yet, but we do have some insight as to why, perhaps, they haven't agreed to a trade, the Thunder and Heat, that is. We'll tell you about that when we come back here on QAM.